Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to Event Icons. Will Curran coming back for an OG episode here. I'm really excited to host a little bit of a party episode celebrating 15 years of Endless Events, and our anniversary that we're celebrating, June 2022, is our 15th anniversary, almost a 22nd anniversary. So we're diving on in, and we got some amazing guests. So let's get this episode started, shall we?
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share Hashtag Event Icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is Hashtag Event Icons.
All right, so we're going to dive in because there's so much and there's so many people in the chat that we gotta dive right in. And so I got to bring my special guest up. First, starting off, the man, the myth, the legend, Keaton from Endless Events in the house. Keaton, thank you so much for coming to join today and be in the house.
Special occasion. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Also, one of my favorite Event Icons hosts of all time, Carmen from Endless Events as well. Carmen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Awesome. Excited. And last but certainly not least, the woman who is in charge of all content at Endless, Sonia from Endless Events. Sonia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Howdy, y'all.
All right, so I don't really have a plan for this episode. We're gonna like shoot from the hip and go all wild. But before we do that, we gotta engage the audience that's out there. So we did a shout out to Leslie. We also got random anonymous Facebook user as well. Also another LinkedIn user saying happy anniversary to us. So I'm assuming it's an Endless folks. That's Thanks Tiffany. So much. That's Tiffany. I love it. Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. I see some of it looks like the LinkedIn API is not bringing everybody's names in. So this is awesome. Also, Gianesh, our amazing CFO as well. Teresa, one of our sales executives here as well, hanging out in the chat. I see you, Mitch. Mitch is joining us saying woot woot. Amber Lieb in the house, coming all the way from Canada. John saying, doing it live. Do it live. Yes, exactly. We also got rock stars. Tiffany, thank you so much. Okay, so the comments are starting to come on in. I don't really have a plan, guys, on how we're going to do this. But, you know, I figured we get a chance for us to, like, talk about all things Endless, the last 15 years, where the next 15 years are going, and for you guys to ask me embarrassing stories about the last 15 years of producing and planning and managing events. Where should we go with this, guys? What question should we start off with? And audience, by the way, if you have questions, please ask them. What do you want to know about the last 15 years? But Carmen, go ahead.
I'm gonna shoot. You know I'm gonna shoot. But I think we owe the audience really like not an explanation, but just like a short background about Endless, because we are at this milestone. And I just like think it would be very nice to hear how it started, kind of like a brief story of how it started, where it went, and where it is right now. Oh. Will, I do have to put a disclaimer on it. You have 3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes. Yeah.
Tell us your life story in 90 seconds.
Most people know that, like, there's an hour long story of how I like started this company that like I give like regularly in like for colleges and stuff to tell like how I started this company, grew it through college. So, I'll try to do the fast version of it. But most people don't realize that like Endless Events started as a DJ company when I was actually a junior in high school. And basically, I started DJing events and things like that even before this like milestone of like June 2007, but June 2007 was when I like gave it a brand and gave it a website, and we called it Arizona Pro DJs. I did that for probably about, you know, 3 years. I think it was like end of freshman year of college was when I like discovered what a production company was. And I found this company over in Chicago that was doing these massive high school dances with like, you know, big club productions. I was like, I want to do that. So I found a production company, rented a bunch of gear, and we produced like our first massive like concert style high school dance. It was really revolutionary for Arizona at the time. And that's how I basically learned production, is by hiring production companies. And after doing it for probably, I think about 2 years or so, I was like, you know what? Most of our revenue is in production, and that's where most people wanted the help, is like demystifying how production works and what lights make it look cool and how do you create an amazing experience. So that's when we pivoted away from DJing towards production. And essentially for the last, you know, since whatever that was, I don't know how many years that is, like 10 years or so, we were primarily a production company, doing the the AV, the lighting, sound staging, events, parts of the event. And what was cool is that, over time, we start building a big influence in the events industry. I think that's one reason why so many of you are here to hang out with us right now. And we started putting out more content, not just on production, but also just general event planning. And luckily, we started getting asked by our clients to do everything but production. We started getting asked to, do the technology of the events, which became very impactful and important in 2020. But then now, you know, people are asking us for sourcing venues. And what's really cool is as of today, I think this is the first time we're like publicly announcing it, but we did a kind of a stealth launch at the beginning of the year, is that Endless is now describing itself as an event management company, just because our clients for so long have been asking us to do way more than just production. And, you know, we thought it was time to bring the Einstein-y knowledge and everything like that to everybody for things beyond production. So that was more than 3 minutes. I'm so sorry. But
we're going to penalize you now. You get a hard question now because you went over.
Damn it. Also, Jonathan's asking if there's a recording available. There will be. If you go to event-icons.com, we'll have this on the podcast for you to listen anytime. So, yeah. All right. So where are we going? You guys now know the history in 5 minutes. where do we want to go next?
I do. I don't know if you are following the chat, because I know you're chatting. So Rachel actually has a really good question. So I think it would be awesome if we tell her, how did the invasion of the smartphone change your event planning life?
It's funny to think, like, 2007, they're like the iPhone was not out. And I didn't get an iPhone until like 2008 when it first came out. The first thing that was most impactful for me was the fact that I didn't have to print out Google Maps. Like I was always driving to different people's houses for events or different venues. And I would have to print out a map, and I put in a plastic sleeve, so I know where to go. So I went and would know exactly when to leave and all those things like that. So the ability to just have that on your phone was just so awesome. So that was one of the first, I think, impactful things. I think the second thing that kind of came in was the ability to communicate with clients on the go was also hugely impactful. You know, the ability to use things like Google Voice to text clients and keep my personal cell phone number hidden from clients was really, really helpful. The ability to see inquiries that were coming in and see requests for quotes and be able to reach out to those people. That was really, really awesome, I think. And that was probably the most impactful thing, I think, when it came to the cell phone initially, in those first couple years. But I think the innovation of how it affected the rest of the events industry was probably also just crazy impactful too. Now think about it, how many people, an app on your phone for an event is just so commonplace. Like we don't even think about anything else. I don't know about you guys.
So much of our strategy these days is around engagement through that mobile device, whether it's a tablet or a phone. I mean, it really has revolutionized attendee engagement, so much so that it's a cornerstone of some of our strategies here at Endless.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's such a good point too. How we, this technologically, Keaton, you've always said it very, very well, is how we use technology to plan and produce better events and manage better events is, I think, a huge cornerstone of what we do. I mean, the fact that we all use Slack so often and to communicate remotely, I mean, and talking about the remote movement of things, the ability to have internet on the go, anywhere in the world is probably, I think, a big reason why we're able to, you know, be who we are. I mean, Carmen, you're in Croatia right now. So because of that, I think that would not have been possible if the smartphone hadn't pushed us in that direction, you know?
I was actually just going to bring that point up, how not only did it impact our work, but also lifestyle. And I know that Rachel had a great follow-up question, because she said but how did it really impact the engagement part? Because now you have all these people have the phone, and technically what we did was we took all their phones before getting in conference room. I'm kidding.
No, but I think this is an interesting question because I don't think that attendee engagement isn't happening because you're on your phone. I think in the last, especially 5 years, content has changed everything so much, and we are making meaningful connections through our phone, through social media, through just the way we interact with the internet. So like, I don't think looking down at your phone or your screen is actually not engaging. You could be engaging on the platform. You could be asking questions or networking or friending people on Instagram. Like I don't think those two things are actually mutually exclusive.
Right. Yeah. We actually just dealt with this question on our PCMA DES office hours, where we were talking as a panel, some of the course instructors talking to the panel, and there's this sort of divide between digital and physical experience in life, which we think that the lines of which are blurring and going away almost entirely, in that you know, our physical lives can just be an extension of what experiences we're having in the digital world, leading to and away from those physical experiences. So, I mean, events should mirror that in some way. If you think about how much like constant connection people have through social media, through all the different things that they do, that strictly starts with and ends with their mobile device or their computer. Events have to evolve in that same way, because that's the best way to keep people in the loop and keep people constantly engaged.
That's true. Yeah. Speaking facts, all you guys are like, you kill the chat's just going nuts right now. So I'm just like trying to keep up with like reading the comments on your, but real quick, just because I want to make sure everybody's alive and we know how many people are watching right now. You guys are going to see like on Facebook, on LinkedIn, whatever, there's the emoji reactions, right? Like, I want you guys to spam those buttons real quick. The hearts, the claps, the likes, the, you know, the ideas, the thoughtfulness. I want you guys to click that and just spam that really, really fast and just go nuts for a quick second.
Or if you can find the infinity logo, put the infinity logo.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. But keep it coming, guys. There's branding, so much stuff coming in. I think that this is a really, really great question on here. Evan's asking, what's the biggest learning in the last 15 years of producing events? So you guys obviously have like a huge history. You guys have been involved in events for a long period of time too. So I don't know if it's necessarily 15 years or not on it, but maybe in the past few years, what have been your guys' biggest learnings when it comes to the many years of playing events? And then I guess I'll share like my biggest thing from, you know, the last 15 years or so.
You asking us or the chat?
You guys, and then in the chat too. That's a great engagement question. Keaton is in the chat real quick. If you guys can all answer, what do you think as being the biggest learning that you've had in the last 15 years? But yeah, I'll kick it over to you guys. What you've learned?
Go ahead, Carmen.
I know. I was just gonna say, because I'm like the last person on our team that's really on site. I'm more talking to event planners at the beginning stages, so I can. And I am a newbie. Like, I feel like I'm the baby in the company because I've been. And for 3 years only. And Sonia, well, you have a little.
I was like 6 months over here.
But your life, you know, you're eventful. Like, I wasn't really like necessarily in events. Plus your husband. You get a little bit of a bonus because he's in events.
We're festival goers, yes.
Yeah. But no, I just like last 3 years, I mean, it's been crazy. I can't imagine being in at 15 because I've seen like pandemic really made a massive transition, not only technologically, but like opening people's mind and really letting them know, if you're not a flexible person, this is probably not an industry for you. Because we knew that from the beginning, because things can happen on site, you need to rotate quick. But now we're talking about like, it feels like we're out of control of our lives. So now you have to be extra, you know, extra, extra flexible. So I remember when the pandemic just started, like how event planners were, I mean, I hate to use word frantic because it's like might be offensive, but they were lost. You know, they needed so much guidance. Luckily, our team had experience doing live streams and a little bit of a hybrid, to where we could guide them a certain way. And then we had all these platforms popping up. So for me, like coming in and being only 1 year in real live events and then transitioning into this madness was just like, you know, so, yeah, that's my experience. I mean, I'm like mind blown how things can change quick, you know, so.
Love it. Yeah. Keem, what about you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to make a corny reference to a Beatles song here, where it's, I get by with a little help from my friends. And what I've learned is that really great partnerships can make your life a lot easier. And I think from my personal experience, I've always worked on the production side of things, more what I would consider toward the end of the event planning process. And there were so many opportunities where I found myself saying, man, I really wish that we had been talking about this, you know, months ago when you were establishing your event goals and sort of trying to design an experience, because there are so many things that we could have done if we had been in communication at that point in time in the planning process. So I think that really just speaks to the fact that if you can identify your partners and include them in your initial ideas around whatever you're trying to host, it is just the most valuable thing you can do. Because there's a lot of really smart people and a lot of really talented people in all areas. And if I'm a customer and I'm an event organizer, I really want to try to rely on those experiences of those people in order to make my event better.
I'm trying to find the original comment to bring it back on screen. I definitely agree with what you guys have said. One thing I think that's been interesting over the last like 15 years too, is like starting off as a DJ company, becoming a production company, now event management company, is how like common the problems are no matter what stage it is. Like one reason why I think that we grew so much as a DJ company was that like we had really high energy experiences that came out like super fast. They were super innovative. We were like playing, you know, electronic music before it was popular and remixing, you know, all the popular music with it. And it was all about like designing a really high energy experience. And because people felt not engaged when they were, you know, at a high school dance, for example. Then we moved on to production, and the challenge was, how do we get our message across and how do we engage people using technology and apps and everything like that? But as we started to move into event management, like how much engagement is still the like one of the number one topics. It's like right now it's like budgeting, you know, engagement, and
return
then
return on investment.
Return on investment. Like those things have never really changed in the last 15 years. And you know, I think that's the really interesting thing part about it, is that, you know, even no matter where you are and what vendor service provides, everybody has a way to affect that. And I think that we all have to be focused on that, because the problem is right now it's kind of like siloed into like this person's in charge of engagement, this person's in charge of ROI. But in reality, like I think like everybody is in every single aspect of the events. So that's probably like, I think the biggest learning is how little things have changed, how much they have changed and how much the little they have not changed. On here. Keep the comments coming. Keep the questions coming on in, whether you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever it is, send them on in. Going through all these questions. There was a really good question about, this is probably the question we thought was going to pop up the most, is where do you see yourself in 15 years from now? So, yeah. Mars.
Calm down, Elon Musk.
I like this, like you guys answer the first part of things too. I'm usually like the vision setter and where we're going and everything like that. So like a chance to hear from these guys too, like where they think that Endless is going next 15 years is, I think, a cool question they get to ask. So I'll kick it to Keaton first, since you went last time.
That's a tough question. I think that we're sort of a little bit of a slave to industry trends and are sort of riding this wave. Evan is speaking right off the cuff, and I think that's right. It's the metaverse. I think that we'll be looking at you know, how to not only engage digital attendees, but also like how to craft a 3D experience in virtual reality for those attendees, and how, you know, maybe we're facilitating face-to-face meetings, but from a physical attendee in one location to a virtual attendee in the metaverse or something like that. Those are going to be just hugely game-changing technological developments for the entire world. And I'm just really excited to see and hopefully be on the front end of how we take those technology solutions and apply them to the event model to just totally revolutionize what we've done in the past.
Ooh, I like it.
I think part of that too is we've seen an increasing trend in just the internet of like instant gratification and personalization, especially in the content sphere. So if you take that concept and apply it to like events, digital events and events in the metaverse and events in 3D space, I think we're going to be looking for more personalized experiences and events and on-demand content, you know, personalized avatars,
I think you want everything to be really when you want it, where you want it, immediate sort of grasping. So we're going to have to events in that way that have historically kind of been, you know, set times and this is when the keynote speaker is. Like, I think we're going to see a change in like the timeline of events and how you interact with that event.
Ooh, I like it. All right, Carmen.
These people killed it. Like the last thing that's left for me is to say, do an event like Ganesh said on another planet. But I was going to say, I mean, there's just so many components that are going to dictate where the industry is going. So it's kind of like very hard to tell. I think from our standpoint, it's just very important to remain flexible and really adjust to what technology is bringing to us. So really, I really don't have defined vision. I just know that with the team that we have on and seeing these past 3 years, how we shifted in directions where we were like pushed by the pandemic and technology. I think the success lies in really being flexible and following the technology and really providing those tech solutions to bring the attendee experience to the next level. So
love it. Yeah. Part of my answer is like my last answer is like I'm starting to think about what's not going to change immediately in the next 15 years. But for us, I think like the big thing is that attention spans are only going to continue to get less. That, you know, just look how fast like the shortness of video has had to be recently. So I think that we really have to think about the fact that attention spans are getting shorter. So if you're talking about engagement and things like that, you got to figure out what that next level is going to be on there. I also think that, you know, the amount of demand and pressure that everybody's going to feel, the different types of events to attend. Like if you think about the fact of how many music festivals exist that are like niche festivals, like for example, like in August, I'm going to a bass music festival in the middle of the, like middle of the state of Washington. Like I would have never heard of that because I don't live in Washington and, you know, I'm not following every single one of these artists, but because of social media and things like that, I'm getting exposed to more and more events across the board. So I think the amount of competition that's going to exist for events is going to become huge. And I think there's a real opportunity to go niche down and try to find more and more unique experiences. I also think that because the demand and the amount of pressure you're going to get for events, like it's going to be really easy for people to like switch competing events that, you know, somebody who might've been going to XYZ conference for 5 years, you know, they might end up seeing a social media ad and then attending a random conference and then deciding, I'm not going to go back to your conference because this one's better. So I think you have to find new ways that you're going to really deepen your relationships with your attendees and find ways to, you know, engage them outside of just the 3 days of your conference on there. So that's where I think definitely the future of the next like 15 years is going to go and the importance of events and as a larger collective.
Well, I want to fight you on the attention span point.
Oh, you think it's going to like reverse? Then we're going to get like...
If you're following social media closely, there's actually been a reversal where, you know, Reels started out and TikTok started out with like 15 seconds, 30 seconds. Now it's 60 seconds. Instagram just pulled out to 90 seconds recently. TikToks are what, like 3 minutes now? Like,
Twitter doubled its character limit.
Exactly. Oh, true. And like, if we're going back further, like Vine was only 6 seconds. I don't think that we don't have an attention span. I think we only have attention span for things we really give a shit about. Like, I think that people, because look at how many people are like, you're following thousands of accounts, but you really only get that content from things that you're interacting with most. You really just don't want to give your attention span to things that you don't care about. Like, this isn't the 90s. I'm not forced to watch whatever on television because I only have 4 channels. Like, I've got 1,000 channels and I want to watch these 3 specific shows. Right. Like, I have so much attention span for... Like, look at Game of Thrones. We've got how many spinoffs are happening? Like, we have so much attention span for this one particular item. But I don't care about, I don't know, Fox News or whatever. Like, I don't care about the news. I care about the thing that I'm interested in. I want to watch my fantasy show and nothing about the reality of what's happening out in the world.
And I agree with you, Sonia. And I think like the major component to that is going to be creativity. So people that are born with natural creativity to engage the audience in first 5 seconds, it's going to be a killer. Cause I mean, if you, you know, once you look it down, like, let's say there's a video and you see, you know, 90 seconds, if those first 5 seconds don't resonate with me and don't do that click, bye. That's why, you know, so.
So maybe the biggest event challenge in the next 10 years is trying to figure out how to create content that resonates with the a large number of people in a sea of content with other people trying to do the same thing. How do you differentiate yourself in your content to be able to grab that attention for longer than 5 or 10 seconds?
It's exactly what the audience engagement question's about. Like, how do you get personalized experiences for niche markets? And, you know, how do you engage with your entire demographic of a really large event, because not everyone's going to be interested in the same thing. So I think personalization is really important there, and your platform and how folks interact with it. And again, having multiple types of content, everything needs to be really attention grabbing, and trying to learn from data and analytics after your event to see what really performed well and what should you be making more of.
Mm. I definitely think that the trend we're seeing this year too, like, is, I think, like, indicative of something that might end up happening over the next 15 years too, which is, like, there's been so much evolution and change and things like that, but so many people are also just copying and pasting their playbooks from the past and just redoing the same event over. And, you know, as much as I joke about how much things have not changed, I also think that's a fear of mine too, is in the future, is that, like, what if we don't really evolve much? And, you know, sure, LED lights become more efficient. I mean, that was one thing I was reflecting on coming up to this, was just like, when I first started DJing, LED lights were not a thing. But, you know, I think things like that will happen. Smartphones will get faster, our apps will get better, but, like, will we continue to just have the same problems that we always have because we're not focusing on those fundamentals?
I think that's a really good point. One thing that I can tell you from a lot of conversations that I have been in and have talked with a lot of customers who are looking at coming out of the pandemic after having had to been forced to pivot to a virtual and now are trying to figure out whether hybrid is the way forward and things like that. They all say a lot of the same thing, which is, we're not as comfortable, right? So we would love to be able to go back to our old event budgets and our old event agendas and sort of go back to where we were before, because that's a comfortable place for us. We know how that works. We know how it interacts with our company. We get the budget question all the time. And I find myself talking sometimes about potentially, you know, having conversations within their company that are beyond just the event team, right? And saying, hey, you know, we have an opportunity here to change the way that we're doing our events. It may require an initial investment that is beyond what we would normally invest in this one event, but we can stretch that dollar further by doing X, Y, and Z. And it's so difficult because those types of budgetary things and return on investment that are core questions in a company are often beyond the event team's ability to, you know, procure that kind of budget. Their decision-making process is hampered by others in the organization who aren't event people. So it's tough because they're just going to say, we love tried and true because it's proven, right? But we all know that life doesn't really work that way. And so even if it's just outside of the event experience, everything about how we consume content and stay engaged and watch TV and all these other things that we do is so totally different than what we were doing even 10 years ago that we really need to be proving that the event industry shouldn't be any different than that.
You know, like, I 100% agree with you. I've wondered if that, like, that's also a trend I'm thinking about too, is like 15 years ago, you know, was the party planner basically the description of what event people are now? And has it grown? Has the position grown more respectfully within the business world over the last 15 years too? Because that's definitely a big challenge, I think, within the industry, is that, like you mentioned, is that the people who control the budgets are not the event people. And, you know, you talk a lot about, like, we talked a lot about it in part of the Global Event Forum, was like, how can we get it to the point where events industry is not commoditized and more legitified, and how do we get a seat at the table when it comes to it? And, you know, that would be something, I think, my hopes for the next 15 years is that we see an improvement in that, you know, maybe in the future, if events are a large part of your revenue, for your event or a large part of your marketing strategy, maybe there's a chief event officer or something like that. Probably have to be like chief CEVO or something like that, you know?
Chief experience officer. There you go.
Yeah. There you go. I think that's like parts of that are starting to like, you know, we see things like customer success and like SaaS has really, I think, changed the structure of a traditional business that, you know, there's probably room for more positions, but you know, I wonder if events will also just become that critical part of people's businesses.
It's a critical strategy in a lot of businesses already. It's just not evolving as quickly as the technology is. So they were in a constant catch-up mode on the planner side of things. And to be fair, it's a huge challenge, especially when you consider that most event planning professionals for corporate companies are probably on the marketing team and they have other duties outside of just planning events and ideating and creating, designing events. You know, these are significant challenges, and I have to go back to the partnership point, because you don't necessarily have to be an expert, but it's always helpful to know an expert.
That's always good to have a friend that's a lawyer or a doctor.
And an event professional.
Yeah. Everybody needs a lawyer friend, right?
It reminds me like back in the beginning, like how, you know, like definitely at the beginning of Endless, you know, Arizona Pro DJs into Endless, you know, was like word of mouth, and like how many people, like it was so important to be known as like the event guy. Like when I was in college, like doing the DJing thing, I was like, I really wanted everybody to know me as the DJ for events. And I literally would do like every single event possible on campus to like saturate the market. Like I basically had a monopoly at Arizona State University. And whenever there was like an event and I saw it was a DJ, that wasn't me, I'd like go up and like be like, who's playing this event right now? I'd be like, hey, next time you should hire me. Here's my card on here. But it helped, because I mean, like I basically saturated that entire market on there. So I don't know if there's anybody on the audience that remembers from the ASU days, but you know, I'm sure they are. I saw a lot of people coming to attend. So, but yeah, that just reminds me of how much that's changed now though, but that's helped so much that you build those relationships, because now, you know, I mean, Keaton, Carmen, you know, with how many, you know, inquiries we get, how many people are like, oh yeah, like I know of Will from, you know, many years ago. We got a client in like, I think a couple weeks ago, who's like someone I knew from college back then. So I think it's really interesting how knowing somebody is so important within the industry too, to be able to have that, you know, source and someone to help you out. So,
but I'm going to bring in like the human thing, because I love doing that. Not only is it important to know them, but like really be respectful to each other. Like I feel that oftentimes we get in this mindset, like business, business, business. But at the core, it's like really care about the human being. If they're struggling putting this planning together and you're not, like step in, help them out. You know, that goes a long way. Not just like, oh, I know you, I've seen you at that event, can you help me out? Like, no. You know, like, let's be human a little bit. Let's help each other out. We all know that we have one of the top five stressful jobs in the world. So I think it's reasonable that we can have each other's back, you know?
I don't think I ever knew that stat, by the way, when I decided to get in the events industry. I don't know if it would change my mind at all.
Probably.
Potentially. We're starting to get some more questions on in. We got a comment in from LinkedIn user. I think that's Tiffany. Again, Tiffany said, it seems to be a challenge for companies to recognize the importance of having a professional planner versus relying on non-planners within their staff to plan of meetings and events. Do you think that you've seen that? Oh my gosh, I just saw the emojis just go absolutely nuts. So keep those coming, guys, if you're like, what's going on? Or you like this comment. What do you guys think? Do you think that's change is evolving and getting better, or do you think that it's stagnated in terms of that challenge of trying to do it all? I feel like it's like a general thing too. Like every industry feels that, but I'm wondering if it especially feels within the events industry.
I was wondering. I think I didn't get the question quite. But are we talking about how important it is to have the actual planner on staff, or like giving anybody, hey, you five are in charge of this, figure it out, you know?
Yeah, I'm curious to know like how often you guys see that people come in and they're like, yeah, someone asked, we had to plan this big conference or event, and you know, that's not my job description, so that's why I'm hiring you guys. And you know, we obviously get the people who decide to hire the professionals, but I'm sure like for every one person that reaches out to us, there's probably hundreds that just try to do it on their own.
Yep. I can firsthand vouch for that because I talk to people right away. So when I'm asking details about the event, I can right away scoop up the part where it's like, are you hired or do you typically do accounting, but you were stuck with this, you know? But I think like the really bringing on the event planner as a full-time employee can save so much money to the company because they know exactly what's necessary, how it's supposed to be done. Because really, I mean, I feel like we are one of the companies that's very transparent from the get-go when it comes to like, oh, this is what you need. We want to cater to you. Oh, you don't like this? Yeah, let's take that off. But some companies, they might not do that. They just, you know, they're just going to give you a quote and cross their fingers. And if you say yes, you know, and you don't know what's on the quote, hey, they won, you know? So I think it's very, very important and it can save organizations a lot of money in the long run, really having that event planner available. And not only that, just having that one person, because events are changing so rapidly that you do need that one person keeping up with the information. And for a full-time employee that has their own job and have that on top, that's impossible. So.
Sonia, Keaton, any thoughts?
Yeah, I was just thinking that the vast majority of the companies we work with, we're probably working with somebody on the marketing team. So you're either dealing with a marketer who's struggling to figure out how to be an event planner, or you're dealing with an actual event planner who's struggling to figure out how to be a marketer. So, I mean, that happens way more often than not. There are some companies that have recognized the need to have a full-on events, a professional focused events team. But that's usually because those events are a primary piece of their strategy for revenue generation. So when you're talking about hosting events for your customers, it pays to have somebody on your team that is dedicated solely to creating those events. But if we're talking about internal training meetings, if you're talking about, you know, whatever, a lot of times those responsibilities sort of get relegated to the marketing team, which is neither good nor bad, because I know a lot of great marketers who are great event planners. But at the same time, if you're, say you got your marketing degree and you step out into the real world and get a job with a company, and then they say, hey, guess what? Thank you for your marketing skills. Here's an event planning thing I need you to do. You're totally lost.
I couldn't plan an event. Not the slightest.
Me neither. It's like, I don't know. It's almost like, you know, telling a center basketball player to shoot a three. Like, come on, you know?
Can you imagine Shaq shooting threes?
Yeah,
I mean, what? When he does, it's pretty fun.
It's pretty funny to watch Shaq shoot threes, right?
Oh, Shaq. Yeah, I mean, yeah, even yeah. A free throw. Come on. Even a free throw.
It's true.
This entire reference has gone completely over my head.
Well, Shaq was a basketball player.
I'm aware of who Shaq is. I'm aware of Shaq as DJ Diesel, though. So
oh. You would.
Plays
you
dirty would. Bass music.
Kazam. His name was Kazam, actually.
Kazam. That's true. Not to be confused with the movie Shazam.
Oh, is it Shazam?
Bad. No, that's the thing. No one ever knows. You never know.
I'm pretty sure it's Kazam. It's a K.
Yeah, Mandela effect for sure. yeah, it's got some good comments coming on in talking about like professional planners are gaining more respect and recognition through things like CMP and DES certifications as well. Yep. What's really interesting to me too, I mean, like I'm probably the example of the most common thing, which is like I came into the events industry with zero experience. In fact, I had already, by the time I got to college, I had been already running the company for like 2 years, and I decided not even until my sophomore year of college to switch my major to special events management and business. And so like I literally had no formal training in how to do any of this, and like learned through trial and error. I mean, by the way, like if anyone ever really wants to see the history of like where I started, just go on YouTube and type AZ Pro DJs as one single word, AZPRODJS, and just put it in there. And I had vlogs of where I recorded, like when I'm in high school on camera, like driving to the events and talking about them and then recapping what happened at the events and things that went wrong and, you know, everything like that. And if you want to see how I got good at talking to the camera, that's pretty much my trial by fire on that one. But what's interesting though, is I think that so many people in the events industry too, like they come in with like no experience. I think we, you know, Carmen would probably know too, being a host of VanCons, it's like 500 whatever episode of EventCons, you ask everyone, what got you in the events industry? They say, well, I was an accountant, or, you know, I was originally in HR, and then someone gave me an event and I loved it so much that I just decided this is what I wanted to do. And I think that was really, that's a very, very interesting part about the events industry too, is just that it's almost so easy for everyone to get a part of it. And I think that you'll see very rare scenarios like Endless, where we've been around for 15 years or so. But I think that's one really, really interesting thing too, is just like how easy it is, I think, to get in the industry, but maybe it's not like to stay in the industry or to reach a certain level of events or whatever it may be. We got another good question coming on in. Rachel asked, how has ride sharing become a game changer, especially for in-person events where public transportation rental cars are tough to come by? I never even thought, I forgot. You talk about phones and talk about, like, we wouldn't have had ride sharing without phones, which is pretty crazy now to reflect on that too. That's definitely even like a more recent kind of change, like, because Uber wasn't around until like maybe 5-7 years ago or so, I'd say. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah.
It's like 2012.
Yeah. So 10 years ago. Oh my gosh.
Uber's 10 years old.
Oh, seriously. My gosh.
How old am I right now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's all. I get to win because, like, I've been doing this half my life now. So I feel like I'm super old now doing this all. But ride sharing, to Rachel's point, I think, yeah, it didn't exist beforehand. I'll talk about an event where we were doing an event in Chicago and we had to, like, go do this, like, move a Lico light, which is like what you use to project gobos and, like, shapes and projections on walls and things. And we had to get a Lico light from the main venue over to this other ancillary venue. So we had to basically move it, and we were in a city and we didn't have, like, a rental car, because when you're in Chicago, you don't want a rental car. And what was funny is that I ended up loading up the base plate, the 10-foot pipe, the Lico, the cables, and everything like that into that, and putting it in an Uber. And I remember it was the first time I ever moved equipment. And, like, luckily it was, like, I think early on, and now Uber drivers would probably be like, screw you, I'm never going to do this again. But, you know, that allowed us to, like, get that over there and keep the cost low for the client. We didn't charge them more to do that. I think maybe, like, we just built it into, like, our travel budget that we had at that point. And that wouldn't have been possible, right? Like, before, like, trying to do that in a taxi or trying to do that with a rental car, like, we obviously had to have a rental car, and that would have driven costs up. So instead of it being like a you know, $200 cost just for us to have a car for one single moment, we could do it for like $10. I think it was like $5. It was so cheap back then. I was also thinking too about how much it changed for us too. Like, when we started going nationwide and doing events all over the country, like, we've loved the fact that we can travel with our clients. And one of the great things is we can keep costs low for clients by just Ubering from, you know, the airport to the venue and then vice versa. We don't have to rent a car every single time that we go do things, almost to the point where, like, I remember we did an event in Philly, in like a super far suburb of Philly. It was like some really far away hotel from the major city center. And shouts to Philly for Sonia.
Like, and where?
It was in Phoenixville, I think.
Oh God, that's
it was
far
so
out there.
Far. It was so far, and I remember that I got out there. I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, but we ended up having to rent a car because we found out there was no Uber to get you that far at that time. I'm sure you could probably do it now, but it was, you know, I remember it being weird, you know, and it ended up, like, costing us way more money. We're like, how is there no Uber out here? You know, what the heck, you know, and I think that's like how much that's changed, I think, travel and our ability to also service clients, like, on both sides, is just, I think, really fascinating too. Yeah, I'm just going to keep reminiscing down memory lane now at this point, guys. Okay. Let's see what else we got on here. We got more questions in here. I'm just kind of picking through. What have you learned are the best way to get clients, speakers, sponsors to be invested in events enough to submit things your company need on time and at a good quality? Ooh. How do you convince – that's something that has not changed in the last 15 years. But Keaton, I think, sound like you, like, got an idea.
Oh, no. This is a horrifying question. I'm not sure that we have. I think that what we I think at Endless has really tried to do is lean on the fact that our process is important and it's not short necessarily. So – we impress upon our customers that, you know, there are timelines. We try to, as much as you can, hold a customer accountable to those timelines, because it's not only good for us, it's good for them as well. Because we don't want to have that experience where, you know,
We're 2 weeks out from the program and it feels like you've got 50% of your meeting planned and set up and ready to go. You know, we would like that to be more like 5% left to go, you know, that kind of thing. So I think we really do lean on our process as being really proven as successful to sort of nudge the clients in the direction that A, not only is the service worth paying maybe a premium for, but also B, that the further out that you could be at getting some of these things in place, the better off you're going to be in a lot of different ways, which is not only stress levels, but budget and otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely, I've noticed that like the babysitting kind of aspect of like having to follow up with people, it, like it's just, I think never going to go away. You know, it
right.
Like whenever Brant and I do presentations, we always joke that we're like, we literally would teach people to be like, you need to submit your presentation ahead of time so we can check it and make sure everything's good. And we'd like preach that, like do the pre-production, all things like that. And Brant and I still show up to our presentations and we're like, hey, we're gonna get this to you the day before, you know. and so and but the thing is with it, what makes it a little bit different is that like we a lot of times we like try to instill the confidence with the planner that like, hey, everything's good to go. We're professionals. We have this all good to go. But, you know, I think what's scary is more so when you don't have a professional, when you're like asking, I don't know, like a VP of a company to do it. And you're like, you haven't done a keynote ever. Like, please, we need to work on this ahead of time. But I think that, you know, as much as you want the best, as much as you put deadlines ahead and everything like that, unless you like call up that person and give them like an angry voicemail, I think it's sometimes really hard to like just make it all happen. And you just have to like almost design that into your process that it's going to take a little bit of time. And, you know, Keaton mentioned like building in ahead of time too, like designing it. So then that way, if you think that they're going to be late, design it to be like 2 weeks ahead of that time. And so then when they're really 2 weeks late, you're actually on time for them too. Which I think is helpful.
I think you just gave away the secret sauce to our process,
oh,
by the
shit.
Way.
Oh, shit. Oh,
I'm like, well, now that's gone. But it's like, if they said before, that means technically I still have you.
That's it, folks. Just set the deadlines 2 weeks early.
Tell me we're not leaving angry voicemails. This is 2022. I want a passive aggressive text message.
I can't even leave a voicemail these days.
Yeah, that's something that's totally changed too. I think like the last, Carmen totally knows this probably better than anybody, but like when we first started the inbound sales process of things, like we used to like make all this content and we'd do eBooks and we would like put together, people would download them and we'd call them and be like, hey, I saw you downloaded, you know, top five mistakes planners make when it comes to AV. Like, what'd you think? And they'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy you called me. You're the greatest. Like that. Yes, I can answer this question and help me do it. And now like Carmen, it's probably like you call them and it's like straight to voicemail immediately.
Yeah. They're like, don't know the number, spam, you know, but you know, I have really empathy for that thought process because I do the same thing because we are being buried with calls, you know what I mean? So now I'm like, well, if I answer, is this really gonna, like, is this a good investment of my time in a sense, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a risk, and I really don't blame people for not taking the calls. I mean, it's yeah,
non-scheduled phone calls are almost disruptive.
Yeah,
really, it's true.
Yep, I agree. And I almost yeah, I was just going to say, Sonia, honestly.
Well, we still have spouses we have to talk to, I suppose. So, you know, you can't really say all calls are disruptive. Okay.
All except for the people in your favorites of your contacts. Let's
exactly.
Be honest.
I don't even have any
of my favorites.
Sonia, I'm offended.
Now I know why you don't ever answer my calls, Sonia. Thanks.
What?
Everyone just goes to the Google screen call button. You can talk to my robot.
Yeah. You can talk to my robot. There you go. Exactly. That's it.
But no, seriously. I mean, when you take a look at it, it really almost is the ethics have changed when it comes to reaching out to people. It's almost disrespectful if you reach without really putting a notice in. And I agree with that because it's like, we're really slammed with information, with calls. Like, let me, you know, I know that you need this service. Let's schedule a time when it works best for you, when you're focused, when you can tell me the most from your event, not when you're driving and I'm like hindering your life right now because I'm calling you when you're driving, you know, stuff like that. So really you got to put that in perspective as well. So
I love it. All right. So I think we got time for like one more question on here. I'm going to see if I can find it. I swear I saw it. Okay. I think this, where the heck is it? You guys asked so many great questions, by the way. Thank you all so much for being here and coming to celebrate this, you know, at this milestone. This was like the best way I knew how to like do something fun. We'll do a live stream.
But you know what I think we should do? I know we talked a lot about professional stuff right now, and I think we should open up the chat for people to ask you some hard, like non-event questions and really wrap this on a, you know, on a note like,
Personal. If you have a personal question, you can feel free to ask it for sure. We got about like 10 minutes left, so you got to get it in really fast right now. Go. Type it. Furious typing. There's a question in here I'm trying to find. Someone asked me what our favorite memories were of the last 15 years.
Not just like about a core memory, right?
Yeah, a core memory. I swear it was in here. There's so many questions.
Shout outs to the reference to Inside Out, by the way.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, there you go. If that movie doesn't make you cry, then I don't know if you're human. Okay, so let's ask that question. What is your like core memory at your time of Endless in the last, how many ever years? And then I'll go last while I try to find this this question. So
it's at 1:15. It's Rachel Moore, who's asked a bunch of really great questions.
Awesome.
Okay. Is there an event moment you could remember that became a core memory for you?
Boom. Thank you so much. I highlighted it, so I think that's why I lost it. So is there an event moment that you remember that became a core memory from you, for you on here? Sonia, you recently went to one of our clients' events, so I'm sure that was your first time you ever got to meet Endless folks in person, too.
I mean, I've only been with Endless for 6 months, and I think I don't have a core memory like necessarily surrounding an event. I think it's sort of Carmen was talking about like the human element. So it's just, we are a remote environment, and like meeting Keaton and Chantel and Tiffany was just like awesome to like feel the sense of community that I already feel through the computer here, but like to have it kind of translate to real life, which I think is probably a great metaphor for like what events kind of are in general. Like, you know, you're in an organization, you're in a company, you haven't met your teammates from California, and you go to this event and you meet in real life and you have that connection. I think that's sort of the same, like being able to, it was like an event for me to go meet the team. So that's probably the closest core memory I have of events.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Carmen, Keaton?
Mine is yet to be made. I can't. You know, I'm behind the scenes, so mine is yet to be made. When it does happen, follow me on LinkedIn. I will let you know.
All right. I like it. Keaton.
That's a cop-out if I ever heard one. Just I've been doing this for almost 10 years now. It was not the career path that I had foreseen for myself when I was 18 and coming out of high school. I've done a lot of different things in my life. And I think one of the reasons why I've stuck with it as long as I have is that there was a moment where, I was doing sales and sort of consultative sales in a sense that I was also helping plan. And I think maybe the first time that it happened was I really had gone outside of the comfort zone of just the traditional solutions that we had been peddling every day for, you know, ever. It was really boring. I found myself to be a fairly creative person. And so I found the right opportunity with the right customer who was trusting me enough to take a risk. And so, you know, was really able to sort of design something from the ground up and then see it in person and happening in real life and watching that design really be used in a real world situation as it was intended. It was really an awesome feeling for me. And it doesn't really matter whether it was AV technology solution or just, you know, helping tweak the schedule or something like that. That sort of creativity for me is fulfilling for itself. And just to see people who are willing to really lean on that creativity and that consultation based on that creativity was really great for me. So that's probably the number one reason why I've stuck in this crazy, stressful profession that is, it can wear you down really easily unless you find opportunities like that.
That's an awesome answer. Almost makes up for
better than I don't have one.
Oh, don't you worry, I'll get you up for this. You're ready. It's gonna be get ready for you on Tuesday.
So I'm gonna answer some of the quick fire personal questions, and I'll give you guys my favorite moment to wrap us on up. But I'll give you guys a quick answer. So Evan asked, "What's my go-to heater to get the dance floor rocking?" I always played head. I call it foot tapping music when people were walking in, and then when I was ready to start the show and it reached maximum capacity, cha-cha slide. 100%. Everybody knows it. Everybody will do it. And it gets everybody on the dance floor. And then you just hit them with like a crazy intro or whatever the hot song is. And people go nuts. But cha-cha slide just means pack a dance floor every single time. And then Nick asked a really hard question. Barry or Wally, and why? I have to pick. Barry and Wally are my two of my three cats. And I had to pick one. I'm sure my girlfriend.
I thought this was a flash question.
Oh, it could be too. I think he's talking about. He might be talking about my cats. I'm not 100% sure. It's a flash. I'm gonna cop out on that one and say Barry 100% because Barry's the best flash for sure. Nick would ask potentially a flash question too. But if I had to pick my cats, I can't pick between the two of them. It's like your children, you know. So that was the question that, I'll answer those really fast, but then I'll answer the main question, which is like my favorite moment. And I'll end it with this one. Like, so probably 3 years before I officially started this company in 2007, when I was a freshman in high school, I wanted to become a DJ after I had the internet radio station. And I basically took my last $400 of making website designs, and I took it and literally bought a DJ in a box kit, two sets of turntables, a mixer, some crappy headphones, and I hooked it up to my stereo, and I convinced a DJ to build his website in return to give me a record crate of like 20 records. I still own those records to this day. And I got those records, and I was very active in the internet live streaming internet radio scene at the time. And I jokingly said when I got my records that I was like, oh, you guys should totally bring me on to play live right now on the radio station. And they said, okay, let's do it. And I was like, what? And I literally had never touched a vinyl record, or I had touched one, but never like DJed ever before in my life. They put me on live, and I literally had to DJ in front of like 400 people on this live stream, that never having DJed before. And so like that event moment was the core memory for me, because I remember literally taking the record and trying to put my like hand to put the needle on the record. My hand was shaking so much. I missed like the first 10 seconds of the song because I was shaking so much, and DJed this crappy set. I hope to God it's recorded somewhere in the world, but people would come into the chat and were like, this is terrible. This DJ sucks. It's blah, blah, blah. You know, like what the heck? And then literally all my friends in the chat were like, it's his first time DJing. Shut up. Give him a chance. And they were like, oh, really? Big ups, man. Like, and they like everyone started praising when they found that out. And that was like, I think the motivation for me to like go and try to become a better DJ. I never played live for like probably a year before I eventually played live again. But, you know, it was definitely a core memory for me, and I probably would have never continued DJing and been down this path. So, yeah, fun story. I don't think is anywhere in the world. Cool. Well, I'm going to hide the current question. You guys, this has been so much fun to get to do this. Keaton, Sonia, Carmen, thank you so much for coming on to help celebrate 15 years of Endless Events.
Thank you for inviting us. And I just want to say, like, to everybody that's listening, if you have any questions, I encourage you to really connect with us online. And I'm always like, I guess everybody else is busy with their own thing, but I would always like to help out, because that is really my job here at Endless, to be helpful and really put out, some solutions for challenges that you're facing. So thank you for popping in.
I love it.
And now play us out with a cha-cha slide.
All right. I don't remember. When it comes on, I can memorize every single word of it. But, ladies and gentlemen, this is a cha-cha slide part two. It's about to get funky. But thank you all for so much for tuning in. All our people in the audience, please let us know that you're in the chat right now. Make some noise in the comments. Give us some emoji love at the end. Thank you so much for everybody for listening. All of you guys, everybody who's watching, a lot of you have been part of this journey for the last 15 years. Your customers, your friends, your suppliers, all those things like that. We appreciate you so much, and thank you for being part of this journey. This has been like a recap of the last 15 years, but we're so excited for the next 15 years, and we'll see you guys all on the next live stream, potentially in the metaverse, and 30 year anniversary coming up real soon. So thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody at Endless. You guys are all so awesome. And I'm going to end this broadcast before I say any more embarrassing stories. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Hashtag Event Icons. To catch all of the bonus content, resources mentioned, and an invite to our Facebook and LinkedIn groups, head to www.event-icons.com. Also, let us know what you thought about this week's episode, share your biggest takeaway, and just tag your social media posts with Hashtag Event Icons. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again soon, right here on Hashtag Event Icons.